This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we have reached the midweek point of the week where we look a little bit back on the NFL and look a little ahead to see what's happening. But Major League Baseball got its postseason rocking and rolling yesterday with the wild card round. And like I've said, I was a little hesitant at first when they decided to do it this format. I understood what they were trying to do. Shake it up a little bit. Get some more markets interested late in the season with the possibility of making the playoffs, even if you don't make the playoffs. And it adds a little bit more excitement. But I'll tell you, when you get a best of three series, it is intense because you know you're in real trouble if you lose that game. And yesterday there were a couple of outcomes, and we're going to get to that in a minute, that I wanted to sort of highlight, especially in Minnesota, where the Twins ended an 18-game playoff losing skid, taking game one against the Toronto Blue Jays in Tampa Bay, playing at Tropicana Field basically in front of nobody in their game against the Texas Rangers. Philadelphia was exploding last night for the Phillies at the defending NL champions. And then the Milwaukee Brewers are taking on a very feisty Arizona Diamondbacks team that took game one. I want to say we apologize for being off with technical problems. I've been in radio 30 years. Technical problems are going to happen, always going to happen. But I do want to say that they're very, very rare here. I have to say that they don't happen very often. I think, you know, we have a success rate of, over 95% on certain aspects. We have a lot of moving parts here. I'm not jinxing it. I'm knocking on wood. I'm not jinxing it. But, you know, for the most part... Go ahead. Oh, yeah, right. we get most of our shows completed, the 4 hours completed. Yesterday, we had to kind of jettison out of technical difficulties out of our hands. But our engineering staff got everything back up and running. So I did want to commend them for doing that. So thanks for hanging with us after some difficulties yesterday. Why I'm bringing it up, because we've got the good, the bad, and the dumb. Obviously, we do that every single day. But we've also got top five and bottom five that we have to get to, that we should have got done yesterday, but we weren't able to get to today. Now, we didn't finish good, the bad, and the dumb. So are you recycling stories?
I'm going back and forth. Because it happened when we were just starting the bad. And I was like, I really want to get back to that one.
Okay, very good, very good.
You know, so we might recycle the bad, but we might change out the dumb and all that fun stuff.
Well, I always give credit to engineers because they have a very difficult job. Because when something goes wrong at a radio station, it could be anything. I mean, it's like when you go into the doctor. Imagine if you went to your doctor and you said, I'm not good. And they said, what's wrong? And you're like, I don't know.
Right.
And the doctor went, all right, I guess we have to check everything, right?
Like, where does it hurt?
Right, where does it hurt? Everywhere. I don't know. Like, you just figure it out, and the doctor has nothing to go on, and they've got to basically test everything. Is it your head? Is it your legs? Is it your arm? Is it your heart? Is it your lungs? Is it your kidneys?
Yeah, and here we have technical situations that pop up almost daily, but they're manageable. This one even stumped our engineers for a while.
Absolutely. And like I said, that's a guarantee in this business. It's always, no matter how great the technology gets, it's a guarantee in the business that you're gonna conk out occasionally. I remember I worked at a radio station in New Hampshire, my first job out of college, and we had a snowstorm. And one of the great things about being in the radio business is it's the only one, but I'm trying to rattle my brain. It is the only one that you can still have communication with something through batteries, right? So in a case of an emergency, when the power goes out and now the internet goes out and whatnot, if you need to know something that's in your area, radio is still great because you can still have a portable radio that is run on batteries to get the information. So we knew that this major snow and ice storm was coming, and we hunkered down. We went to the store. We loaded up with food and put it in the break room. Everyone was working all through the night to give people updates. And the power went out, as it would. I mean, it was ice storm and everything. And so we went to the backup generator, and somebody didn't put gasoline in the backup generator. So we couldn't even be on during one of the major. We had to actually find a gas station that was open and get gas, but it was like impossible because power was out. But we found a place to get gas. I don't know how we found it, but we got gas and pumped it in.
That always seems to happen, right?
Right. When it thawed out, it was a major, major deal. Like, who didn't make sure that the backup system was operational?
So, and but it, you know, these things always occur in this crazy business. So I want to get to baseball from yesterday. I watched a lot of the afternoon games, and then I caught the endings of the games at night after dinner and whatnot. Tampa Bay, that was a mess of a game. They made four errors in their game against Toronto. They made four errors and they lost game one, and they haven't been playing well since exploding in their, right off the bat. It's in April. They were the hottest team in baseball. It looked like they were going to win 100+ games. It looked like they were going to run away with the American League East, but Baltimore hung around, and they hung around just enough to wait for the swoon to happen, which always seems to happen. And injuries started piling up on the Rays, and they ended up in a wild card spot. But they were shut out in their game. I'm sorry, against Texas. I said Toronto, but I meant Texas. As the Rangers win 4-0. And they played in front of the smallest crowd in Major League Baseball history from since 1918. That is... So, now listen, I don't know how Major League Baseball works out its schedule from when they get the games and they go, okay, guys, congratulations on 162 games. Here are your wild card schedules. I don't know how that's made. I don't know if they say it's better if these are the afternoon games and these are the night games. I know Philadelphia is a big market, so you probably want to put them in prime time, I guess. Two American League games early in the afternoon, two National League games late. I know we're going to shuffle it around a little bit as these games go. That's kind of the tendency in the postseason, especially in the NLDS and the NLCS. If you get an afternoon game, you might play night next time, whatnot. But to open the playoffs, knowing that you are putting a team that doesn't draw fans anyway, and an afternoon game kind of at the last minute. I mean, this wasn't formulated until Sunday when the season was over. So you're basically asking people in the Tampa St. Pete area, can you go to a baseball game starting in the afternoon at Tropicana Field, a place you're not going to anyway? And Major League Baseball went, yeah, you know what? Make them the lead game out of the gate. Now, compare and contrast that to Minnesota. So that was the other afternoon game in the American League. And Toronto was playing the Twins, and the Twins had lost 18 straight postseason games. Their last win was in 2004. Now, when somebody goes, hey, they haven't won a game since 2004, right? You might go, well, how many times did they get to the playoffs in that 19-year span, right? I mean, maybe it was one series. Maybe it was three series, whatever it is. But they had gone to the playoffs a number of times, and they lost 18 straight playoff games. I mean, in a regular season, you'd go 18 straight. That's awful. In the postseason, you couldn't get one game. Every time the Twins would go to the playoffs from 2004 up, they were swept. They won a game at Yankee Stadium and lost the rest of the way. Every time. They won 101 games a few years ago. Got swept by the Yankees. Swept, swept, swept every time. And their place was electric. Target Field was packed with people trying to will the Twins on to victory. The Tampa Bay Rays had 19,000 people, and that's generous. Did you see how many empty seats were in the drop for that game?
I saw the attendance numbers, and it's like, I don't think so.
No, me too. I said, come on.
Every once in a while, I think they just, you know, whoever makes the ticket announcement go, you know, there's not that many people here. It's like, well, you know, how many people bought tickets and just didn't show up?
Exactly.
Let's go with that number.
I mean, there were chunks of that stadium.
Yeah.
They were empty.
And the only thing I could think about was, you know that they have a new stadium deal in place, and I know they're moving forward with it. Do you think there's a part of them that goes, maybe we should rethink this?
That's what I'm wondering.
Because, I mean, this is a playoff game, and I get it. You know, it was like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Something. I mean, it was early. And I get that, you know, that's not an ideal time for a game.
Right.
But
it isn't, and it's hard to plan for. If you are a Rays fan and it's Sunday and you were anticipating a week, and then all of a sudden they tell you, oh, game one is going to be on at 2 o'clock or whatever start time it was on Tuesday, you're like, oh gosh, I got to talk to my boss to see if I can get the day off and I get down there.
Or take an early day or extended lunch. I mean, there's all those different things. But, yeah, but I know. So you can you could validate, I guess, that. But at the same time, it's like that place was, you know, there's no fandom there.
Yeah, and in Minnesota, they had an afternoon game, and they got 40,000 people at Target Field cramming every seat they possibly could.
Yeah, and I mean, and honestly, it's like, why would you, you know, if you're a Twins fan, why would you assume they were going to win?
Right, sure, right.
You know,
maybe you want to, you know, be there in case they do.
I think that's probably why.
A generation that hasn't seen them win, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you have 19-year-olds who are like, I've never seen the Twins win a playoff game.
They're like the Bengals.
Yeah.
Remember the Bengals hadn't won a playoff game, you know, prior to you couldn't text about it.
That
was the whole joke. It's like you couldn't text the last Bengals win, playoff win.
So I thought it was a bad look for baseball to have. Look, give it a night game, give it a chance, you know. But right. I get it. I mean, I understand. If you've got media rights, they're like, we're putting Philadelphia on. You know, like that game's on in prime time. Like it's one of the top markets in the country. And that's the other thing about these wildcard games.
It's the same again.
Yeah.
Today. Why are they...
I'm surprised they didn't mix it up a little bit. You know, just say, all right, the American League's going in the afternoon, and then we'll
stagger it, right? Go American League, National League, American League, National League. All three of these games are American League, National League, National League. I mean, it's the same teams playing at the same time.
Speaking of National League, and we'll get to this as we continue throughout the show this morning, the Arizona Diamondbacks are a very young, spunky baseball team. They went to Milwaukee, and they put two on the board in the ninth to give them the cushion. It was a 4-3 game for most of the game, and that was the more compelling one because Philadelphia was sort of controlling their game with the Miami Marlins, but Corbin Carroll was fantastic. He's going to win Rookie of the Year. Had 59 stolen bases this season, but he had a home run. Huge bomb off Corbin Burns. So Milwaukee takes that one on the road, and they've got their two aces coming up in games two and three, and three if necessary, because they've got Zach Gallen going tonight. Merrill Kelly will go game three.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sportsnap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, continuing along, thanks for joining us on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. So Texas beat the Rays 4-0 at the Trop. Rays committed four errors. Ugh. I mean, two errors isn't, like acceptable, but four is like, what are you doing? Good Lord. As I mentioned earlier, the Twins beat Toronto 3-1. Royce Lewis had a fantastic game. The rookie hit two home runs. As the Twins get their first win since 2004 in the postseason. Arizona, as I mentioned earlier, they had three home runs over two innings off Corbin Burns, which is outstanding. And as I mentioned going into the break, they've got Zach Gallen going tonight. And if they need game three, they got Merrill Kelly. So if they don't, they'll have Merrill Kelly for game one of the NLDS. I think the winner of that is playing the Dodgers, if I'm not mistaken, in the bracket situation. Yeah, I think because Philadelphia and Miami, I think, are the teams that will get Atlanta. And the Phillies won last night. Zach Wheeler was great, took a shutout in the seventh inning. By the way, the Marlins are in the playoffs. Does anyone even know that? Does anyone even wake up to that? The Marlins are in the postseason?
And did I see it correctly that Marlins man was at the Diamondbacks game?
Was he at the Diamondbacks game? Why wouldn't he be at the Phillies game, Marlins man?
I think that's where I saw him.
Is he still a thing? I mean, he was a thing like 7 years ago.
That's a great question.
I haven't seen him pop up a lot lately. He used to be such a thing. He was showing up at the NBA Finals and every game. But, yeah, the Marlins are in the post.
Yeah, no, you know, I saw correctly. Marlins man, it says MLB fans confused as Marlins man attends Diamondbacks.
Wow. Why was he there in Milwaukee?
And wearing, you know, his traditional orange Marlins shirt.
Exactly. Remember the World Series in Kansas City where they tried to get him to wear a blue? He goes, no. He goes, well, there's a purpose for this. I buy tickets in the front row in the angle of the TV camera to wear the orange to stick out. I'm not wearing Royals blue.
To blend. Like,
to blend in with everybody. It's kind of the purpose of why I'm here. I can build up some notoriety. That guy's backstory is awesome. He's a lawyer, wealthy, single, and just that's all he wants to do with his money. He goes to games. He buys the best ticket he can, and he goes to games. Fantastic. The Marlins. So the Marlins are interesting because I thought about this. If the wild card round was, you know, like first game was on at one place, and then the next two are at the other place. what would the Marlins have drawn if they were playing down in Miami for the postseason? Mm,
good question.
Like, thank God that was in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Because if you had a morning today where the big stories were the two Florida teams were in the playoffs, Tampa Bay had 19,000 generously, and the Marlins had 15,000 generously for wild card games, it would be a terrible look for baseball. Instead, what you get is a city like Philadelphia that's crazy about the Phillies, and their stadium is jam-packed. Milwaukee's jam-packed. Minnesota's jam-packed. And the Rays were the only one playing in like a half-filled dome. By the way, they made a point in the broadcast last night what I thought was really cool, was they took a shot of the crowd, and it was behind the crowd, and they showed all the different jerseys that people were wearing of Phillies players from long ago to now. And it really was an awesome sort of display of loyalty that the fan base had. Like, there were Steve Carlton jerseys. There were Lenny Dykstra jerseys. There was all sorts of ones from different players. Roy Halladay, the late Roy Halladay, was represented.
What
crowd.
About John Kruk?
I was wondering. I didn't see a Kruk jersey.
Ryan Howard.
Yeah, Ryan Howard was in there. Yep, there was a Ryan Howard jersey.
But isn't that Philadelphia, though?
Yeah, that's very Philadelphia.
I mean, you'll see that in NFL games, too. They have NFL jerseys from, like, almost every era.
Yeah,
in
exactly.
Every shade of green that you could possibly think of.
I've always said, I'm not a jersey guy, but if I get a jersey, it's going to be a player I admired as a kid that is not in the league anymore and is a Hall of Famer.
Or the way I would do it, too, is, like, you know, maybe even go the retro look. Like, if I was to choose a Philadelphia jersey, it would be that. It's not powder blue. I don't even know what it is.
That light bluish color?
That blue color, yeah. And I would get Mike Schmidt.
Yeah, right. I'd get Mike Schmidt,
you know,
too.
Get an old-timer, like, you know, hey, he's, you know, one of the best in the games, but get that retro blue with red jersey that
exactly
they bring out for old-timer games or whatnot.
So, wild card rounds continuing today. We might have some teams eliminated. We might have a game three, deciding game threes.
What if we have all four?
That'd be great. I'm sure Rob Manfred
would wrap it up.
Absolutely love that. Yeah. Oh, no. If they all got wrapped up?
Yeah, they all got wrapped up.
Yeah, they were done after two games.
Thanks
that was
for coming.
Quick. Man, thanks for coming. That was easy. Get that over with. Look, it was better than the one game. Remember the one game wild card playoff?
Oh, God,
it was better than that. That was a little silly.
You mean the one that Mike Trout participated in? The only playoff experience he has?
The one you play 162 games to play one game in a wild card round. It's like, come on. We can't even get a series out of them. Can't even like breathe for 2 seconds. Be like, okay, like a best of three is pressure enough.
Well, as it is, I mean, for these teams, I mean, you know, they had a day break. That was it.
Yeah, that was it. Rocking and rolling. So that's October baseball for you. So NFL, as we headed, we got top five, bottom five coming up later on in this in show because we had to miss it yesterday. And then we look ahead to the games coming up. I saw the Cowboys and the 49ers. They're playing in primetime for the first time since 1990.
Yeah, I think that's a good choice.
You know what my immediate thought was? How in the world did we go 30-plus years without throwing those two teams together in a primetime game at some point?
Huh.
Right? I mean, you know, I know the Niners haven't always been good.
Right,
but
they've been decent. They've been to more Super Bowls recently than the Cowboys.
30-plus years, you haven't been able to tag these teams. Whenever they were on the schedule, you haven't been able to tag them in a primetime game.
Because what, they'll play each other once every 7 years?
They play each other once every 4 years.
Every
guaranteed.
4 years, guaranteed.
But if the Cowboys finish first and the Niners finish first,
then they'd play each other.
Then they would play each other. If they finished third, they would play each other. So you'd get them a couple of times. I mean, in the 30-year period, you're going to get them a good chunk of time. But seriously, you couldn't throw them on one time. Like, Dallas is a draw no matter who they play.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you can play them against the Saints or you can play them against the Atlanta Falcons. It doesn't matter. They're a draw. And I'm surprised that at some point for 30 years, we haven't been able to figure out how to slap those two teams together.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean? You know, like, not a Monday nighter, Sunday nighter, Thursday
nighter.
Yeah, I was
thinking of the 90s, like when Jeff Garcia was with the Niners. They were pretty good. In early 2000s, they made the playoffs, and they figured
they're going to meet each other in the playoffs, and then that'll suffice.
No, because you can't count on it.
I know. I'm just
you can't anticipate that they'll make the playoffs. Like what night? It's like week five. It's like week five. Dallas is playing San Francisco. I'll just give it to Fox. instead of putting on Sunday night or putting it on Monday night.
Well, maybe that was an issue. Maybe it was early in the season and before flex scheduling. It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense. It's amazing that the prime time, they haven't been on prime time in 32 years.
And especially those two teams with such rich history. I mean, I'm looking forward to Sunday.
Sure, I am too.
Sunday's game is going to be fantastic. Yeah, exactly. And it makes it even better that you got one team that's 4-0 with an unstoppable offense and defense going up against a team that's 3-1 that seemingly has a decent offense with an unstoppable defense. It's going to be fun.
Sean Devney is going to join us later on in this hour from Heavy.com. We'll talk NBA. They had their media day earlier this week as they get ready for the upcoming season with training camps beginning. The Denver Nuggets are the defending NBA champs, but a lot of eyes on Milwaukee now that Damian Lillard will be there. Boston with Jrue Holiday, a couple of other movements. Phoenix, can they make a run at Denver? And how solid is Denver as NBA champs that will be the favorite going into this season? We'll talk to him coming up in this hour. But again, we'll get to some NFL news coming up. I want to talk about the Patriots because we talked to Levin Reed yesterday, and we did get that in, and I didn't really have a chance to sort of dissect some of the things that Levin Reed was saying about New England, which was, look, Mac Jones is going to be the starting quarterback. There's no controversy. But I asked him a specific question about Bill Belichick's act with the media. And it was the same thing we kind of talked about with the Denver Broncos. You know, Sean Payton is kind of built in that same Bill Parcells way as Belichick is. They're sort of disciples of Parcells, where you get like surly, you kind of like, I know it all, you don't know anything. And how quickly is that wearing thin? And Levin Reed was emphatic that this is not going well for Belichick right now. When you're losing and you start getting surly with reporters and you don't have that something to back it up, right? Like that stuff, that moxie to back up your surliness, meaning, hey, we're 5-1. Hey, we got one of the top offenses in the league. Or we got one of the best defenses in the league. And we're Super Bowl favorites again. And we're defending Super Bowl champs. Everything that Bill Belichick had for 20 years in New England to sort of back up his surliness and his sort of evasiveness, well, it does wear on you after a while. And as we said many times, what have you done for me lately business? And if you're Robert Kraft, there is going to have to be a feeling of, hey, Bill, where exactly are we going with this team? Especially on an offense where the quarterback situation is still way, way, way up in the air. Talk about that coming up as well as we continue on the show today. But coming up, I want to get into a serious topic. Something that was brought to our attention this week, and something that I think we do have to have a conversation about in sports. That's coming up next as we continue. It's Wake Up Call.
Yeah.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Again, on Twitter, or X, whatever you want to call it, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. We roll along on a Wednesday for you. All right, so I do want to get into this Trevor Bauer story, and it's going to contain some details of his case. He posted a video out on Monday, basically say, here's his side of the story. Now, was he not allowed to say anything? This is sort of like a 2-year gag order or something, and that's why he was allowed to do this.
He wasn't
now
allowed to say anything until the case was resolved, and I think it was late last week both parties dropped their ends of the cases.
Right. So he's in Japan pitching because he has been banished from Major League Baseball from a situation that happened where he and a young woman engaged in consensual sex. He apparently was too rough for her liking, and she went to the hospital. She said that there was strangulation and facial bruises. But Bauer's Monday video had some interesting details to this. So in the details, he had some things that his lawyers were able to uncover in their case. Now, he says he's never paid her a dime, and he won't pay her a dime. She got $300,000 from her insurance company. But now they've settled the case. All the cases are done. All the litigation is over. So he was allowed to talk about it. And in this video, he basically pointed out a couple of things. One, she sent text messages to friends saying, next victim, Dodgers pitching star. What should I steal next? Somebody encouraged her to go get the bag, right? And then he showed a video of her where he is sleeping next to her wearing like an eye mask, and she doesn't have any bruises on her face the next morning. And she's just sort of in the video smiling, showing that she's with Trevor Bauer. So Bauer lost his career over this. Now, I don't know what happened, and none of us know what happened. And so, you know, I want to make that clear. But I do want to say this, and I think there's a larger issue that it's worked with this case in our society. All right? And that is this. If Rob Manfred had an ability to go to every single individual in the country and speak to them directly, like he got into some time warp where he could talk to 300 million people, like in a very short amount of time. And he went to every single individual, not on TV speaking to the masses. I mean, just each individual person, and said, hey, Mary Jo or Steven, Marsha, whatever. And he said the following. We hear this stuff going on with Dodgers pitcher Trevor Bauer, and it's very disturbing to us. We don't know any of the details. We're going to let the legal system play itself out. But trust me, as the commissioner of this league, we're going to keep a good eye on this. We're going to keep a watch on this, to how this plays out. But we're not going to suspend him, and we're not going to allow him. We're going to continue to allow him to be employed by Major League Baseball until we get some resolution of this, or we feel like the evidence is overwhelming that would cause us to act in a manner that is suitable for Major League Baseball. Would you be okay with that? And I think a good majority of people would say that seems fair. That's what I would want if that had happened to me. I would want my company to do that rather than overreact and fire me. I would want that. I think you could get 90% of the people out there. There would always be a group that says, no, suspend them now, blah, blah. There would always be that. But I think a majority of people, reasonable people, would say, yeah, let that play itself out. So where did we go wrong? Who are the people that demanded the Dodgers get rid of Trevor Bauer almost the second this story came out?
Social media.
And where are the people that demanded Major League Baseball get rid of him the second this story came out?
Social media.
Exactly. Who's boycotting games because we won't let a legal process get? And I'm going to say this again. I have zero idea what happened. I'm not just going to take Trevor Bauer's word for it, but the evidence is pretty compelling that she was interested in something else, that she had a real ulterior motive for having a relationship with Trevor Bauer. But I can't really make that judgment. That's his side of the story. That's a video he's putting out. Okay? So I don't really know the details. But what I do know is that this was a massive overreaction on the Dodgers' part and a massive overreaction on Major League Baseball. And he's lost millions of dollars he is not getting back.
Yeah.
Millions of dollars he's not getting back. And if this indeed was a shakedown, if this really was a shakedown, and That is a problem for us as a society and a problem for the sports entities that they feel that there's this powerful force out there that they have to answer to anytime something like this pops up. Anytime.
Yeah. Like, I guess, what's trying to stay ahead of it?
Right.
You know, it's like, oh, let's make a decision before it gets out of control, before we look bad. And they became judge,
look
jury,
bad.
And executioner.
That's what I don't understand. That's my problem. Look bad. Why can't it just be
right on
when we see the evidence, when we see this case going in a certain direction, we will then make a decision. We're not just going to take her word for it. We're not just going to jump up and down and go, oh, she filed a police report, so now gone? Contracts nullified?
Hopefully.
Your baseball career is over?
I guess in a way, hopefully Trevor Bauer becomes a martyr in this situation, because it's, you know, I mean, it is, it has become that where she said something, oh, we must act.
Yeah, right.
It's already, you know, it must be truth.
You know how dangerous this is for professional athletes?
Oh,
forget
God.
I mean, forget anybody else.
And how is he supposed to know?
Let's just keep it in the sports world for a second.
That was the part where I felt really bad about, was when he was reading the text messages that she had on her phone. That was, you. I mean, it was evidence that was going to be used against her. Saying that, you know, it's like, hey, who's my next victim?
Right.
How should I handle? How should I get, you know, whoever was texting back? It's like, you got to get a hold of that 51 mil.
Didn't she write in the text message something like, I need daddy to choke me?
Yeah.
Right. It's like, oh, all of a sudden there's this evidence coming out, and this guy lost 2 years of his career over it.
And
because
he kept
somebody
saying,
had a plan and a purpose, at least according to him, she had a plan and a purpose to get money.
And it's and I think it's so important, you know, for, you know, there's other reporters who are reporting on it who think they have the inside story but don't, and are just going off of this and using their profile to empower the narrative of the story. And I think that's equally as dangerous.
I was thinking about this last night because I was trying to put this in the larger context. And a story I came up with was back in 1994. Now, this is before social media, so it would have been an entirely different world, and it does involve a sadder situation than a baseball player getting accused of sexual assault. And remember the woman Susan Smith in South Carolina?
No.
If you don't remember this story, Susan Smith was a woman that drowned her two kids in a car, and she blamed it on a carjacking, and she blamed it on a black man who carjacked, took the car away, and she didn't know what happened to her children. Her children were gone, and they were missing. And everyone was looking for them. But I had a friend of mine that was covering that case at the time. And he said the moment she filed a police report that her two kids were missing and she was carjacked, the police knew she was lying. So they didn't go around and arrest a bunch of people. They didn't go knocking on doors in certain neighborhoods to try to find out who did this, try to get answers. They knew she would break, right? But they kept it calm. They just went through the whole thing, and eventually she cracked, and she admitted, yep, I had depression, whatnot. I was going to kill myself and my kids, but I got out of the car at the last minute. The car went into the lake. I couldn't save my children. She killed her two kids. But here's why I bring this up. Because, and this was before social media, but there is an authoritative element to our society in stories like this where we can form our own opinions, right? We don't need, like, we didn't need a jury to tell us if OJ killed Ron and Nicole, right? Like, we all formed our own opinions. But we didn't have a powerful outlet for those opinions other than the people around us, right? So I'm sure there were people who thought Susan Smith really was hijacked. And I'm sure there was a portion of the people who went, I kind of think that woman killed her babies. Now, the police, because they're trained in this kind of thing, they listen, they watch body language, they watch how you say things, they watch how you inflect in certain ways. They're watching everything. I've said this many times. Like if my wife's missing, I'm suspect 1, 2, and 3 to the police.
Yep.
Right? That's all of us. They always go to the people that's closer to the story. You're the primary suspect in any of these kind of things. There's an authoritative presence, right or wrong, that sort of goes, we're sorting this out for you. Now, you can have your opinions, but that's it. There was none of that in this Trevor Bauer case at all. None of that at all. This was a movement that was coming along that said, if a woman makes an accusation, she needs to be believed. And Major League Baseball said, 100%.
And it made it easy that Trevor Bauer wasn't liked.
Right.
As a player, as a pitcher.
Right. He's not a liked player. Right.
He's not. He wasn't a liked player. People always had issues with him. If he was so great and such a Cy Young, why wasn't he able to stay on the same team over and over? Why did that team kind of keep him? You know, you can make all those types of excuses. What this story kind of reminded me of, too, Tony, was the Duke lacrosse team.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Duke lacrosse is another one.
Remember? Exactly. I mean, everyone said, guilty. You know, boys, college boys being college boys. Yeah. Look, rich white boys got in trouble.
And that wasn't an era of social media.
Yeah.
Where people were formulating boycotts and protests and marches. Because you can easily arrange those now through the power of social media.
Yep.
When prior to that, you couldn't. Somebody from, you know, New Hampshire was not going to drive to South Carolina for a Susan Smith protest march. But nowadays, because of the collectiveness, we can.
This is Brett Musburger, and you are listening live to Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio with my main man, Tony D.
All right, welcome back as we continue. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio. Media days in the NBA happened earlier this week as we get ready for training camp and, of course, the upcoming season. Sean Devney joins us from Heavy.com to talk NBA offseason and looking ahead to the season. How are you, Sean?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Sean, on our Progressive guest line for a quote on home, auto, or pet insurance, visit progressive.com. All right, so let's get to the big one. Let's get to the Damian Lillard Milwaukee Bucks trade that was analyzed as soon as that happened last week. How do you see it from a point of Milwaukee losing Jrue Holiday, gaining Damian Lillard, and what it means for the Bucks?
Yeah, you know, it's I think you hit the nail on the head that, you know, I think there's a lot of focus on gaining Damian Lillard, but losing Jrue Holiday is no, you know, that's not a small thing. You know, as a two-way player for a team that that needs as many defensive weapons as it can get. So a little bit of to me, a lateral move. I don't know that this is something that really pushes Milwaukee into necessarily championship favorite category. And then they kind of have the double whammy of you give up Jrue Holiday and he winds up going to the one team that can probably knock you off more than anybody, and that's the Celtics. So, you know, I'm not as bullish on this move from the Milwaukee Bucks as a lot of people. I understand why they did it. I think they're looking at the big picture, and that's Giannis, you know, coming into free agency in 2025. And really trying to show him that you're doing everything you can to win. But at the same time, I'm not sure that this really makes them that much better.
From the Boston standpoint, I was equating this to a chess match, but you really, really don't know how to play it, which is they got rid of Marcus Smart. How could they have ever envisioned getting back a defensive player like Jrue Holiday after getting rid of Marcus Smart? But it seemed to work out in the players that they did get rid of, because Malcolm Brogdon didn't want to be there and Robert Williams never plays.
Yeah, it you know, when you look at what the Celtics gave up in total, you know, giving up Marcus Smart, you know, swapping some picks around, then giving up you know, another pick for Jrue Holiday. But you give up Marcus Smart, you give up Robert Williams, who, like you said, just hasn't been healthy, and Malcolm Brogdon, who was great off the bench last year. But you give up those three guys, and you get that back Porzingis and Jrue Holiday. I mean, you've made a huge upgrade in terms of talent. We don't know about fit. We don't know about chemistry. You know, I mean, this is the second year in a row that the Celtics will be coming in with you know, basically a brand new cast, and they're going to have to all get together and figure it out pretty quickly. So, you know, there's certainly questions there, but just in terms of the talent, you know, if Porzingis can be anything close like what he was last year in terms of production and health, and of course, you know what you're going to get from Jrue Holiday, then yeah, they've made some serious additions here. And really, to me, have, you know, put themselves at the top of the East. I don't think there's any question about it.
Where does this leave Miami, that was supposed to be a player in all of this, in terms of getting at least Damian Lillard in a trade, maybe even have to go to the drawing board and figure out a Jrue Holiday acquisition? But they get neither. Where does this leave the Heat?
Yeah, it's got to be a huge disappointment for Heat fans, that's for sure, who all summer, you know, were in the driver's seat of the Damian Lillard thing. You know, if you remember, there was talk that he wasn't even going to play unless it was for Miami. It was
right.
Miami or bust. And now not only is he not in Miami, but, you know, you have the shakeup like you talked about with both Milwaukee and Boston now coming back with much different teams, and the Heat sort of being right where they are. I think in the end, the Heat looked at what they did last year, in the playoffs, and they looked at, you know, having another year to kind of gel together. They were a much better team after they got Kevin Love, you know, just in terms of their chemistry and the way they fit together. So I think that they're looking at that and saying, you know what, we don't need to make that many changes. I think they really like the young guy, Nikola Jovic, who was great in the World Cup. They did not want to give him up in a trade. They really like Hami Hakez, who they drafted from UCLA. So, you know, in the end, they decided to run it back. I think that's unsatisfying for a lot of Heat fans, but they didn't mind where they were in all of this.
Philadelphia, what is going to be the end result of James Harden? I'm asking you to speculate here, but what do you think is going to happen with the James Harden, Daryl Morey situation in Philly?
Yeah, you know, and I was talking to some people about this in the past week. And, you know, when you look at what happened with Ben Simmons, you go back to the Ben Simmons thing at Philadelphia, Daryl Morey kind of got lucky on all that. And you know, he got praised for being patient and all that, and that's fine. But he really got lucky in that James Harden decided he would ask out of Brooklyn and kind of force a trade to Philadelphia, and everything just fell into place. There's there's no even, you know, what GM call it, an eject button. You know, he had the eject button with the James Harden thing. There's no eject button on this. That's it. He's out of options. He's going to have to take back a bad deal, and he's got this reputation of never doing that. You can have the you can have whatever reputation you want. If you haven't got the goods, then you haven't got the goods. And right now, James Harden around the league is not seen as the goods. Probably the best hope is still the Clippers, and they're only mildly interested, if that. And so that would mean that the Sixers would have to take back a package, highlighted probably by Terrence Mann, who's, you know, a decent young player, but not, you know, certainly not a superstar. So, you know, it really, Daryl Morey's going to have to take a bad deal, and he's got this reputation, like I say, of not doing that. That's going to have to change.
Let's go to the West. The Nuggets on top, obviously winning the NBA title. They've got the best player in the game. They got the best 1-2 combination with Jamal Murray. They've got depth. They got a great coach. But how close is a team like Phoenix? How close are teams around the West to challenge not only the supremacy of the champs, but the Western Conference champs as well?
Yeah, I think the Lakers and the Suns will be the teams to watch in terms of chasing those Nuggets. And you know, if you ask Mike Malone, he'll tell you that that's exactly what they want. People talking about the Lakers and the Suns, and they want to fly under the radar, which like they did last year. And then you know, when you get to June, they're back on top. I still think that they are the best team. You know, I think that there's serious holes with the Suns, the serious holes with the Lakers, and of course, health with the Lakers is going to be a big concern. You know, the Suns have obviously a lot of frontline depth and you know, guys who can kill you in that starting five, but when you start getting into the depth chart a little bit, it gets thin real fast. So that's a big concern with the Suns, and then of course the Lakers. You know, how long can Anthony Davis and LeBron stay healthy? You know, it's just something that since they won that bubble championship in 2020, they just haven't been able to do. And you know, I just don't think they're as good as the Nuggets. So yeah, you know, there's certainly going to be some challenges there. There's going to be more high profile teams, but I still think the Nuggets are the best team in the West.
Is there a window still open for Golden State? I know people were ready to close it, but is it still open?
I don't think so. I think that age is catching up with those guys just enough. And you could see it last year. Everybody was just a half step slow. There was, of course, a lot of chemistry issues. Of course, Jordan Poole that we saw. I don't know that if you've got an old team and that's your concern, then adding Chris Paul, man, that's leaning into it, isn't it?
It sure is.
Really leaning into the age thing there. So, yeah, you know, I think they'll be a very good team. You know, I think they'll be right around 50 wins, and they'll be a threat. I don't think that they've got the juice anymore. I think that, like I say, everybody's just a half step slower, and I think that adds up.
I thought that Sacramento series that they did win in seven, I thought, okay, but you got the sense, like, Sacramento's coming. Like, that's a young team, you're not quite there, but, boy, you are really knocking on the door. Sean, great stuff. I really appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for joining us.
Okay. Thanks for having me, Tom.
Sean Devney, heavy.com. Catch him there covering the NBA media days yesterday around the league. Yeah, look, Denver, sometimes you see teams win championships and you go, okay, but I kind of see next year as this, this, and this. Denver is not one of those teams that is good. It doesn't spit out dynasty, right? It just doesn't. But it could. They do have the best player in the game, even if the guy would rather be in Serbia, and he's not in every commercial that we have on TV, and he's not a guy that is pouring into America's living rooms. Nuggets still don't get a lot of nationally televised games. That probably is going to change since they're the champs. But he's the quietest best player in the league that we've had, because the best player in the league, depending on your metrics, obviously, has always been a player like LeBron, somebody that we've sort of watched grow into that role from a high school student as a young player in the NBA, or a Steph Curry that just electrifies us all the time, championship on top of championship. And what happens? Madison Avenue gets a hold of these players, whether it's Kevin Durant or Steph Curry or even Giannis, anybody else that sort of carried this torch. They're selling us insurance, they're selling us phones, they're selling us everything, And Nikola Jokic is not doing any of that. He's barely on your television during the regular season. But they do have everything right to continue a dynastic run of winning titles. But the West is going to be, again, a daunting place to try to do that.